Thanks for joining us. You can always catch the latest sermon online, but we sure would love to see you join us in person to celebrate and support each other in our love for God, our neighbors, and this church. We are South Britain Congregational Church. No matter who you are or where you are on life's journey, you are welcome here. And now, enjoy another great Sunday sermon, and we hope to see you soon.
We are doing Climbing Jacob's Ladder this morning. And as you know, in sports you have all kinds of halls of fame, football in Canton, basketball up in Springfield, baseball in Cooperstown. Someone told me that hockey is in Toronto. Does anybody know? Is that right? I'm not sure about that one. But we're looking at the Old Testament Hall of Fame. And last week we turned our attention to Samuel of the long flowing hair, like Fabio, you know. And today we turn to a trickster and a con man by the name of Jacob. And in the sermon, I'll give some background to the scene today. But as I read this account, and I'm cutting verses just for time's sake here, as I read this, you might think about your own life, and have you had a similar experience to Jacob's? This is selected verses from Genesis 28. Jacob set out from Beersheba and went on his way toward Haran. He came to a certain place and stopped there for the night, for the sun had set. And taking one of the stones there, he made a pillow for his head and lay down to sleep. And he dreamt that he saw a ladder, which rested on the ground with its top reaching to heaven. And the angels of God were going up and down it. And the Lord was standing beside him and said, I am the Lord, the God of your father Abraham, the God of Isaac. The land on which you are lying I will give to you and your descendants. They will be countless as the dust upon the earth. And you shall spread far and wide, to the north and south, to the east and west. And the families of the earth shall pray to be blessed as your descendants are blessed. I will be with you, and I will protect you wherever you go. And I will bring you back to this land, for I will not leave you until I have fulfilled my promise. And Jacob woke from his sleep, and he said, surely God was in this place, and I did not know it. And he was afraid and said, how fearsome is this place? This is no other than the house of God. This is the gate of heaven. This is the word of the Lord. Thanks be to God. Amen. Family dramas are very popular these days. On TV we have This Is Us and Succession. Downton Abbey is being made into a movie. It's just a very popular time for these dramas and family interactions. But the great granddaddy and the great grandmother of all these family dramas would be the saga of Jacob in the book of Genesis. This is the father and mother of them all. And it's a story that has everything. It has sibling rivalry. It has the relationship between parent and child. It has forgiveness. It has anger, hatred, maybe character development. That's a little bit under question. Maybe some character growth and development and change. But also, just a lot of skullduggery. Okay. And today we're going to look at the beginning of this Jacob story. And it's very deep roots in our humanity. And first of all, there is the sibling rivalry. And I suspect any family that has more than one child has at least some form of this taking place at different times. When Patty and I were on vacation, I picked up a copy of the Boston Globe, and it had an article about Ida O'Keefe. Has anybody heard of Ida O'Keefe? Okay. There's a reason for that, as we'll see. She was one of the sisters of Georgia O'Keefe. And, you know, she's the one who did those huge paintings of the flowers and everything. And there is a reason why we've never heard of Ida O'Keefe. I should say that there was a showing of her paintings, Ida's paintings, up in Williamstown at the time I was reading the article. But she is definitely not as well known as her sister. And there's a couple of reasons for this. First, she did not have anyone to promote her work. And Georgia, of course, had people who were promoting her work, putting her artistry before the people so that she had public attention and recognition. But secondly, Georgia, feeling threatened, made sure that the public did not hear about the budding talents of her sister. She did everything she could to make sure that we would not hear about Ida. Sibling rivalry. And I don't know what happened in your family. Today, our girls are the best of friends. They're, you know, 5 or 10 minutes away from one another. But when they were teenagers, I thought there were days when they would kill one another. I don't know. You know, this is my sweater. No, it's not. Now, in the Bible, the mother is Rachel. And Rachel is having twins. The first one out was Esau. He would be the firstborn. The second one out was Jacob. But he came out, very symbolically, holding on to the heel of his older brother as if he wanted to pull that brother back and be the firstborn himself. You know, it might be hard for me to admit that maybe my sister was a better person at sports than I was, or better at school than I was. But Jacob had a really hard time accepting the fact that his brother was firstborn. And with that meant that the family blessing would be given to him. And that meant that Esau would be head of the family and get all kinds of property and everything as well. And Jacob didn't quite buy this. Now, it must be said again that sibling rivalry is a very complicated thing and it has to be kept in check. But it doesn't help when the parents play favorites. And I don't know if you've ever been together with adult children where they're talking about mom and dad and they're saying, hey, you were dad's favorite. Or no, mom liked you best. Have you ever been in on those conversations? Well, that's one thing, but it becomes all the more aggravated when the parents actually do play favorites. And this was the situation. Isaac the father likes Esau. Esau is the football type. He's a big guy, barrel-chested, hairy, very hairy. And he is the hunter. And he brings the cats to his father, and his father just loves him. Jacob is quieter. He's sedentary. But he's also smart in a very canny and sneaky and unscrupulous way. Doesn't help now that his mother, Rachel, thinks that he's just the apple of her eye. You know, think about it. It's important, isn't it, to have our parents approve of us. It means a lot, looking back. You know, how our parents felt about us, what we meant to them. And I was struck a bit by Eleanor Roosevelt's experience. Because if you've ever been up to her cottage, you know, up the Hudson there, it's fascinating, and her story's fascinating. Her mother, Anne Hall, was very disappointed in Eleanor because she wasn't pretty. And, you know, she's just a little girl. And Anne Hall calls her Grammy. And this strikes Eleanor to the quick. It really crushes her. And she feels very inferior. And she feels that she has really disappointed her mother because she wasn't pretty. It's hard. And yet her vulnerability, because of this, her vulnerability made her especially sensitive to the downtrodden in this country. And if you remember, it all began when her husband was Secretary of the Navy, and she was sent to visit some of the veterans of the First World War who were suffering shell shock. And she was just shocked by what she saw. And it was that sympathy for the downtrodden that helped her define herself as her own person, even without that mother's approval. It helped her define herself and become a person who really made a mark on this country's history. Sibling rivalry, the favoritism of parents, all make a big mess. And this tension in the family comes to a height when Isaac the father is old now, he's feeble, he can't see. And he's about to give the family blessing to Esau. But here's where the skullduggery comes in. For Jacob, with the help of his mother, she's very much involved in this, Rachel. With the help of his mother, he dresses up and tries to pass himself off as Esau. And I used to love this story when I was little, how he took like sheep's wool on his arms so he would be hairy and everything. And he goes to see his feeble father, blind. And the father says, "Is that you, Esau?" And Jacob says, and again, barrel-chested, Jacob says, "Yes, I am Esau. Feel my arms, you can feel the hairiness." And the father says, I bless you, my son. Jacob has just what he wants. He's been blessed. He has the family blessing. Once that is given, you can't take it back. Now, as you can imagine, the way things worked out, he never really got to enjoy this. Because Esau is really ticked. Esau wants vengeance. He wants blood. He wants his brother dead. And he's out to get him. And this young guy, scoundrel, con artist, is forced to run away, run, to leave behind everything he knows, family, friends, all that's familiar, and just escape out into the desert. And escape to what? To what kind of future? A very uncertain future, a very unknown future. And he's out in the desert wilds, and it's getting dark. And he takes a stone for his pillow, if you can imagine that, and lays down his head. And I don't know if you've ever been in that situation where you've had to leave behind everything that's familiar to you, everything you've known, and go out just into the uncertain future, and the night is falling, and all you have is a stone pillow, as hard as it can be. I don't know if you've ever been there in your own life, but something totally unexpected happened with Jacob. Something he wasn't seeking for. He wasn't an especially religious guy. As we've seen, he's a con man. And yet, in the desert, in the night, he has an experience of God. The most unexpected thing in the most unexpected places. He has a dream of God and a ladder that connects heaven and earth with angels going up and down upon it. And in that he receives the promise, I will be with you. And he wakes from that dream. He wakes from that dream, startled. And he says those famous words, surely God was in this place, and I did not know it. Have you ever had a similar experience, totally unexpected, out of nowhere, out of the blue, where that ladder seemed to have dropped down, connecting heaven and earth? I've had that happen. I've had that happen as I was rowing in from an island off the main coast. I've had it happen when I was in a hospital room with a cancer patient. I've even had it happen in church. A ladder let down, connecting heaven and earth in perhaps the most unexpected of places. The experience of God. Have you heard of Stephen Colbert? He has the Late Show on TV. I think he's number one on the Late Shows now. He had an experience of that ladder. He was 22 years old, a young man. Graduate of Northwestern and Second City. He was walking down a Chicago street in the dark at night on one of the most bitterly cold days imaginable. And he was anxious. When he was 10, his father and two of his brothers were killed in a plane crash. And he had trouble with the grief. He was carrying it for years. And one of the things, you know, he said afterwards, you know, perhaps he was just struggling with the fact, why are they gone and I'm still here? But he was struggling. And then, in the darkness of that night, a stranger actually gave him one of those New Testaments that has the Psalms and the Proverbs. And he said, he took that little Bible that the stranger had given him. And it was so cold, and there must have been humidity in the area because it was frozen solid. And very symbolically, I think, he said he had to literally crack that Bible open. And it opened to a part that gave sort of the contents that, you know, if you're anxious, read such and such. And he was anxious. So he turned to the reading, and he turned to Jesus' speech on worry in the Sermon on the Mount. You know, consider the birds of the air, the flowers of the field. Which one of you by worrying can add an hour to your life? And he said, you know, for the first time, he understood what it meant when people said, the words speak to you. He said, the words leapt off the page. And his, you know, he stood there on a street corner in one of the coldest days of a Chicago winter and read right through the Sermon on the Mount in those frozen pages. And in that incident, there was a ladder with angels climbing up and down. In that coldest of winter nights, in the darkness, like Jacob, you know, he could say that surely God was here and I did not know it. He said, my life was never the same after that. The ladder connecting heaven and earth, and angels climbing up and down it. In your life, in mine. There was a promise given in that dream that Jacob had. And again, it just comes out of the blue to this guy who's a con man. You'd never do business with him in your right mind. And that promise is, I will be with you. You'll come back to this land. And the nations of the world will want the blessings that you and your family have. I will be with you and I will fulfill this promise. In Bath, England, there's a cathedral that is sort of you know, a prime example of English church architecture. And it's interesting, at the entrance to this church, it's called the Abbey Church, at the entrance to this church, there are two ladders with angels going up and down it. Some of them are actually hanging on for dear life, but they're all coming up and down it. And I think what the architect is trying to say is here, heaven and earth touch. Here you can experience God. And it would be my wish and my hope, I don't know, when you were coming into this sanctuary this morning, did you by any chance see a ladder there? A ladder connecting heaven and earth right here? A ladder with angels going up and down it? You know, here, earth touches heaven. And here it would be my prayer that we might hear what Jacob heard, that promise from God. I will be with you. The future may seem uncertain to you, unknown, but I will be with you. And perhaps as Jacob, we will walk out this morning saying, with Jacob, surely God was in this place. And I did not know it. Amen.